Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 17th, and I thought we'd kick off today with this chart comparing the 75th percentile for the Fed funds rate and the Fed funds rate itself. And there has been a significant mismatch, so that's indicative of some illiquidity in the overnight markets, in the repo markets. So the Fed had to intervene today to introduce additional liquidity into the market. Part of the reason why there is such illiquidity is because of a confluence of factors. The first is that the Treasury has got a huge chunk of debt that needs to either be refinanced or issued over the course of the next few months, and that is beginning to cause indigestion. Then you have the fact that banks have had to contend with a lot more regulation over the course of the last decade, particularly after Dodd-Frank was introduced. And because of the fact that they're no longer really the big players in the mortgage markets, because the private equity sector has taken over the private lending markets, and then because of tier one capital requirements, banks are a lot less leveraged. And as a result, they have most of their money tied up in bonds, in treasury bonds. Therefore, they don't have the flexibility in their balance sheets to start to absorb the quantity of bonds that are coming online, which pretty much ensures that the Fed funds rate, if it's going to continue to go lower, is going to require the Fed to start buying bonds. And that's quite outside of the question about whether we're going to have an additional round of quantitative easing. This was one of the points that investors had been making over the course of the last year. It was that when they eventually did stop contracting the size of the balance sheet, then the balance sheet would naturally start to drift higher again, just simply because of the funding requirements that the Fed has to provide. And we've seen a graphic illustration of that in here today. So this is, I think, another sign that the Federal Reserve is at the top of the interest rate cycle. We're likely to get another interest rate cut tomorrow, and then that is probably going to require additional assistance in terms of liquidity provision. On the other side of the world, you had China in here today, who demurred from cutting interest rates. They are relying on reducing the reserve requirements in the banking sector to try and pump additional liquidity into the market. They have so far refused to stimulate in terms of infrastructure development and in terms of the housing market. When we look at the iron ore price, it has pulled back really quite violently from the test of the $120 area at the, well, it was probably back in July. That third of our 33% decline has now started to find support in the region of the trend mean. It's absolutely got to hold that level if this is support building. It also represents the peak from back in early 2017, so there is an argument that this is a natural area where some support might be expected to be found, but it's going to have to do quite a bit better than it has done in order to really cement the view that iron ore is on a recovery trajectory. The fact that copper was weak again in here today, but perhaps more importantly, has demonstrated resistance in the region of the trend mean and has held the sequence of lower rally highs. Well, then that also needs to do better in order to really confirm force the global investment community that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. There has been a rather impressive rebound in soft commodity prices, but they were in negative territory in here today as well. The continuous commodity index is now just above the trend mean. It's testing its sequence of lower rally highs over the last year. It was in negative territory in here today. So, downside follow-through tomorrow would take it back below the trend mean. It would probably represent another lower rally high. So, this is the do or die moment here for some of these commodities. Now, if we go back then and think about what that means for China, well, so far they have been, or I guess perhaps the best way to think about it is they've learned the lesson from quantitative easing that it is wonderful at inflating asset prices, but China now has a property bubble. Everything that was evident in the property bubble in the USA back in the mid 2000s is now evident in China. They have the liar loans, they have increasing leverage, and there is then the real issue that almost a quarter of all units are currently vacant. So there has been massive overbuilding. So this is China probably has enough of housing stock to for the entire country for the foreseeable future, for decades to come, potentially, not least because the population is now starting to contract. So China is acutely aware of the potential for a property bust. They're trying to stimulate the consumer. And that's one of the reasons why they're concentrating on reserve requirements at the banks. Well, the stock market was in negative territory today because the banking sector was, in fact, leading on the downside, and there has been a sequence of lower rally highs on the big state-owned banks since April. Now, it is still trading above the trend mean, and I do think that there is potential that the government will intervene to support these banks because they are essentially arms of the government. If we want to look at how private companies are doing, then the performance of the Shenzhen B index is probably a better arbiter or a barometer because it doesn't have banks in it. And that was also in negative territory in here today. And there is still a sequence of lower rally highs here. The 900 point level absolutely needs to hold. Of course, the situation in Hong Kong remains rather tense. And we've had a counter trend rally over the course of the last 3 weeks. It's now in the region of the trend mean. This is about where we might anticipate some resistance to be encountered that has occurred in here today. And now the question is, how much of this rebound can it hold during this period of consolidation? And the big question, I think, is how well is it going to hold the 25,000 level, which is a bit of a psychological potential support level. The Chinese renminbi was also in negative territory in here today, and I do think it is very unlikely we're going to see a trading below 7 anytime soon. But if we go back then and think about what's going on in terms of US banks, well, they were in negative territory in here today, but well off the lows. This looks like a consolidation in the region of the upper side of the range. That range has persisted just about all year, and it has been really quite choppy. There has been a number of instances where it has pulled back violently, only to rally really impressively subsequently. The 300 point level continues to hold, with the potential for some of the most onerous of the rules implemented as a result of Dodd-Frank to be unwound. Then that is positive for the banking sector. When we then think about the regional banks, well, they're probably not involved in a lot of swaps, and certainly don't have to meet those kinds of margin requirements. They're much more leveraged to the health of the domestic consumer. There is a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs evident over this year, and the impressive rally we've had over the last 3 weeks is now testing the most recent of those. It absolutely needs to sustain a move above the peak that we saw in August of this year, around 105. And if it can do that, well, then there's a clear argument that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. But it is at the point now where we need to see some evidence that these downtrends can in fact be broken. And the Russell 2000 is in a similar condition. It is testing the highs for this range that has persisted for just about all of this year. And this is a rather important point because we had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And it's quite normal to have a period of right-hand extension following that kind of event. And the range that's persisted for just about all of this year so far has that characteristic. It needs to push back above the 1600 point level in order to demonstrate that this isn't a type 2 top with right-hand extension, but rather a medium-term consolidation. So I think that is one of the more important points. Then the transportation index also has lost some of its consistency and has been subject to very volatile trading over the last 18 months. It's also in the region of its previous peaks for this year. It needs to sustain that move above the 11,000 level. I saw this graphic in here today, and I thought it was particularly interesting. It's the well, I better pull it over here. It's S&P 500 operating earnings compared to U.S. national income. Well, operating earnings have been doing rather well. National income and corporate profits have been pretty much going sideways for most of the last couple of years. Corporate profits have tended to be a lead indicator for the performance of the stock market. We're next going to see corporate profits updated on the 26th of September. It is prone to revisions, so I think that will obviously factor into the kind of signal that it can provide. The big question, of course, is whether corporate profits are going to remain within this range or whether we're going to see a breakdown. What's particularly interesting is the divergence between operating earnings and corporate profits that was most acute back in 1998 through to 2000, and it's quite similar to what we have right now. It's rather different to what we saw in 2006 and 2007. And of course, operating earnings just evaporated for a while in 2008 before rebounding very strongly in 2009. There is the potential that if we do have a recession, this overextension or this will in fact be unwound. Now, when we think about what that means, well, either we're in a bubbly scenario where that overextension will be further extended. And I think there is the potential that that will be the case. This continues to look like a bullish consolidation for the Nasdaq. It looks like a bullish consolidation for the S&P 500. And the S&P was in mildly positive territory in here today. If we go back and think about some of those other cyclicals, like the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, that is also looking like a bullish consolidation. Now, when we then go back and think about how is Europe doing, well, the ECB is back on the quantitative easing path. They have made some allowances for the banking sector in terms of tiering their deposits. And the banking sector is now testing its sequence of lower rally highs and is pausing in the region of the trend mean. When we think about the insurance sector, then they don't get the same kind of tiering. And that is a bit of a headwind. Some of the insurance companies are complaining that there is some discrimination against pension funds. But of course, that is the point, that quantitative easing and extraordinarily low interest rates rob savers in favor of speculators. So the insurance sector still is outperforming. It has benefited enormously from the momentum move that we've seen in bonds. But that isn't sustainable, and we've certainly had some pulling back of the tolerance for negative yields over the course of the last few weeks. German bund yields accelerated on the downside. Now we've had the largest rally or the largest pop in the yield in at least the last 4 years. Anything comparable, you'd have to go back to look at 2015. And that move that we had in 2015 saw the yield go from 0 to 1%. There is a clear potential that this current move, before it is eventually run its course, could take the bund yield back above zero. So there is ample scope here for additional selling pressure in European bonds. When we think about what's going on in terms of the UK, the FTSE 100 was in mildly negative territory in here today, and we're presented with a really very choppy environment over the course of the last 3 years. The pound continues to rebound, and it was in positive territory against the dollar in here today and is climbing back towards, well, closed today at 125. That is now unwinding a good part of the overextension relative to the trend mean, but it is confirming support in the region of 120. It really remains all to play for in terms of the UK's relationship with Europe. And the pound is rallying, and it is now unwound about half of the decline posted from that failed break above 115. Having had failed breaks on the upside and again now on the downside, it's quite likely we're going to see it push back up towards 115 before the next big question about the likelihood of whether the UK remains in the EU or not becomes back into the pricing of the currency pair. And I do rather think that it is likely that there will be a tweaking of the backstop agreement with Northern Ireland, and then that will allow Theresa May's deal to pass Parliament. That is going to satisfy nobody. But unfortunately, that I think is probably at this stage the most likely scenario. And of course, then the question if or the other point, or the I think the next most likely scenario is that there will in fact be an election, which will follow an extension of the Brexit deadline to sometime at the beginning of next year. In either case, it does look like the pound has got further to rally, at least up towards 115 in here. Now, when we think about the FTSE 250, then it has pushed up and out of its range. It's rather important that we're seeing this kind of strength against a background where the pound is rallying. It does suggest that mid-cap investors are willing to look past the pound and think more about the prospects for the UK economy if this Brexit ordeal is eventually put behind it. Then, when we think about the MDAX in Germany, where it has been laboring over the slowdown in growth, then it is also at the upper side of its range. And the second section index of small caps in Japan is coming back up towards the region of its trend mean. Taken together, UK small caps are clearly outperforming, and we've got a reversionary rally underway in just about everything else. So there is the potential here that a further rally in cyclicals is one of the more likely scenarios. Then, when we think about the oil price, it was in negative territory in here today. It's unwinding the pop on the upside that we saw yesterday. It's now right in the region of the trend mean. The number of stories swirling around as to where the potential mix of drones and cruise missiles originated and who was behind it is still rather uncertain, but it does look like Saudi Arabia will be able to get about 70% of its production back online, and there is plenty of oil around. I think that is perhaps the most important characteristic. There is a very clear backwardation, and Generally, that would represent a shortage in the short term. The point is, though, that one of the reasons for that is unconventional drillers don't have a great deal of incentive to go off and pump even more when the price is this low. And when they can hedge at $57, and well, that isn't quite true. We need to look at the WTI curve to get a true measure. It's more like $51 out to 2022. They don't have much of an incentive to do that, particularly when they've got break-evens around 50. They would much prefer to be selling futures around the $60 area, and in order for that to happen, we would need to see oil prices substantially higher. The more likely scenario is that in the absence of this geopolitical premium that has now been put on the market, that oil prices should be moving lower. The geopolitical premium, however, could potentially keep a bid under the market. It does suggest we're in for a more volatile environment, because considering the success of this attack and how audacious and high profile it was, it's raising the potential that there could be copycats, or there will be additional efforts to try and curtail supply. And this does suggest that we are at a point where there is a clear geopolitical premium on the oil market, and that suggests that we are going to have a more volatile environment, but perhaps not quite as volatile as it could have been, considering the fact that today the USA is the largest producer, and it's not as if there's anybody selling or sending drones into Texas. So that does suggest that we could see a great deal of volatility in oil prices over the course of the next while. Natural gas, which has been on a rebound for most of the last 6 weeks, is now right in the region of its trend mean and is beginning to consolidate. Gold prices continue to hold around this $1,500 area, but have not really benefited from this additional risk premium on the oil market. I continue to think that this is looking increasingly like a first step above the base. So far, the reaction has not been particularly deep, and it's reasonably similar sized to the one that we saw initially around $1,400. But I do think that we are still at a point where there is still some risk of consolidation in the gold market before we see a further resumption of a bullish, or I think, or let's just say a continued move to new high ground. The strength today that we did see in gold miners is welcome. It does suggest that some bid is coming back into the market, that there is some backing and filling going on. It does suggest also that this is just a consolidation in the region of the $30 area and the upper side of this space, and that there is likely to be some additional trading around this level. It might take another month or two before we start to see a substantial move above $30, but if the reaction can be limited to just a 10% pullback, then that really would be one of the more benign potential scenarios. Silver prices have also steadied. They've pulled back from $19 and change to about 18. This has been a larger reaction than we've seen since, well, in quite some time. The $20 area has been an area of resistance in the past. This continues to look like a consolidation. Personally, I'm just waiting. I still think it's likely we're going to have an additional pullback. I would rather be buying somewhere in the 17s than the 18s, but I am anxious to initiate another long position in silver. I think that it is more than likely over the medium term we're going to see the price move above the $20 area, for the simple reason that central banks the world over are going to have little choice but to continue to persist in their liquidity provisions, because the alternative is just simply unacceptable. And that does suggest that there is going to be additional pressure on fiat currencies, and the weakness of the dollar over the last couple of days has been at least a partial salve to precious metal investors. This has been a very choppy trend in terms of the dollar index, and I think the hallmark of the trend has been that it has failed to sustain upward breaks. So we're getting some consolidation of the most recent of those right now. The clear consistency of the uptrend has been its ability to continue to find support in the region of the trend mean. As long as that remains the case, we can give the benefit to higher to lateral ranging. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.